the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and Chris Prytower.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Income.
And I'm Chris Prytower. We're going to begin a series about planning for income in retirement. But how do you create a secure source of income and not worry about outliving your assets and dying broke? I want to begin by saying that you need to throw out everything that you've been told about how you should plan for retirement. You've been told it's all about your number, a number that once attained, it assures you a worry-free retirement. And Jim, it reminds me in the 90s, there was a recording artist by the name of Aaliyah. She released a popular album, which was titled Age Ain't Nothing But a Number. Well, the financial industry is focusing on a number, and the fact is, it's not working. And the truth is, it's about you, your spending, your lifestyle, the degree to which your income needs are funded. So for our listeners, sit back, take notes, and the things that we're going to be discussing today and the weeks ahead, we believe are going to change the way you think about your retirement and how you actually plan for it. So, Jim, let's roll up our sleeves and where do we start?
Well, before we get into some of these details, Chris, I want to set the stage as to why you need to think differently in planning for retirement than what you've been told by, let's say, the media or financial experts. And when you look at what has changed over the least the 4 decades that I've been involved in this business, there are 4 factors that have changed the retirement landscape over the last 4 decades. We'll get into these a little bit, but it'll put in perspective why you need to plan differently today than you did, let's say, 10 years ago or 20 years ago. Number one was the elimination of defined benefit plans that sort of went out the window at the end of the 70s and the 80s. 2, medical advances and longevity. I mean, it's hard to believe when they put Social Security into effect in 1933, a male was expected to live only to age 65. You took your benefits at age 62, and if you're a man, you died at age 65. Well, that's no longer the case. Between a husband and wife today, you're likely to spend between you 25 and 30 years in retirement, and that means your money has to last over a longer period of time. 3, bear markets and historically the lowest interest rates in recorded history. And 4, quantitative easing, the level of debt, and central bank market interventions. If you listen to the weekend program or you tune into a financial cable station, what are we always talking about in the business? What's the Fed doing? The Fed's going to meet. Chairman Powell said this. This Fed governor said this. So central banks have more control and influence over the financial markets and hence the rate of returns that you are getting. When I first got in the business in the early 1980s, most individuals had defined benefit pension plans that covered anywhere from, let's say, 60 to 70% or more of their salaries. You still have that in the government sector. But when you combine their defined benefit plans with Social Security benefits, most retirees had income that was equivalent to their working salaries. Well, defined benefit plans were replaced by what we call defined contribution plans, commonly known today for most individuals are 401k plans, which proliferate the corporate world today. So what you save is what you have when you retire and is all you have, subjecting you to, let's say, the vagaries of the market. You no longer have guarantees like a defined benefit plan. The second change was the advances in medicine and health, which have extended lifespans, which means assets have to support you over a longer period of time. Chris, I can think of my grandparents. My grandfather died at age 63 with his 4th heart attack. My grandmother had heart issues, but because of the influence of drugs, she lived to 78. My mother lived to age 85. So living longer means you are more likely to run into, number one, higher medical expenses during the last stage of your retirement, from costly drugs to treatments to extended long-term care. The third element is QE and the lowest interest rates in recorded history, which means assets don't produce the same levels of income, which creates the risk of spending down assets in a much faster rate and running out of money. And finally, and we talked about this on the weekend show, we have central bank intervention, which has escalated over the last two decades. In other words, central banks are playing a greater role in the economy and the financial markets. And that's impacting markets from interest rates to asset returns, creating bubbles like we had in tech at the beginning of the millennium and real estate in the last decade. So retirees or their advisors have to monitor not only asset classes, but central bank actions, as they can directly impact the outcome of your returns and the planning assumptions, especially that are made in your financial and retirement plans. So because if you add all these factors, the gist of this is the retirement landscape has changed dramatically how you should plan for retirement and the focus of the type of planning and the outcome that should be planned for.
Well, two bear markets and zero interest rates for such a long time has produced lower returns than most investors had planned for, and even the assumptions that were used in retirement plans. Jim, as you've pointed out, the stock market literally went nowhere in 13 years. And, you know, it peaked in March of 2000, then it lost over 50% over the next 2 years. Now, it did rally back over a five-year period, but then it lost almost 60% by March of 2009. So it wasn't until April of 2013 that you were even back to even again. Then there were those low interest rates that investors had to contend with over a 10-year period, and that's when the Fed kept interest rates at 0% over a period of 7 years. So the Fed has raised interest rates 9 times. We're still dealing with 2-3% interest rates today. And it's a far cry from the 7-8% rates that were available as the new millennium began.
Yeah, I want to come back to that point when we get to the topic of what we call withdrawal rates on this segment. But, you know, this, you know, what you just mentioned and brought up are two key factors. Stock market going nowhere in 13 years. Not to mention, Chris, had you retired in the year 2000, I could easily got you 7-8% on what I call fairly safe fixed income investments. And if you look at today, even today when you're planning for retirement, most software programs have embedded in them when they're making planning assumptions of where you'll be based on your savings and your assets, they're using 10% returns for the stock market, which has been the historical rate of return over 100 years. And they're also using anywhere from 5-7% on returns from bonds. Well, that just simply hasn't been the case if you take a look at the last two decades. So, but I want to introduce two concepts and another matrix that should be used in planning for retirement. Hopefully, as we go through these concepts over the next several weeks, we can set you on the road to success in planning for your own retirement. Or if you're retired, change the outcome to one that is more secure than where you are. And I want to talk about two concepts. One is called systematic risk. Now, these are the things that you should be familiar with if you're an advisor or if you're thinking about investments. For example, income risk. You're in a bond fund. The Fed cuts interest rates, so the bond fund lowers your dividend. That happened to the vast majority of investors who were in bond funds in 2000, and it happened to them again in 2010 as a result of quantitative easing by the Fed, where they drove down interest rates on 10-year treasuries down to 1.3% in the summer of 2016. Issuer risk, which deals with investment risk. You buy a stock, they get into financial trouble, they cut the dividend, you buy a bond, they default. So you have issuer risk. And then, of course, we have market risk. All of a sudden, well, just take a look at what happened last year. We gave back all the gains for the year in 6 days. And then look what happened towards the end of the year. We had record-breaking stock prices as we headed into October. And we gave it all back at the end of the year with all the major indexes and asset classes losing money. We also have what we call political risk. And these are things like inflation, which every retiree has to deal with. And by the way, as you get into your 70s, your inflation risks are greater than the rest of the public because you're dealing with healthcare premiums, whether it's your Medigap insurance or Medicare insurance increases. And I hate to tell you, the bad news is those rates are going to be going up even more so in the next decade. Public policy risk. The Fed over-tightens interest rates, which is what they tend to do, leading to a recession. And that is what surprised a lot of people in 2018. The Fed raised rates 4 times, and they got more aggressive in their language and their press conferences in September and December. And the market didn't like that. And all of a sudden, what was looking like a good market with fundamentals going for it changed dramatically, and investors ended up the year with losses. Now, I want to talk about spending risk. In other words, you could be Larry Lots of Bucks or Mickey Megabucks. Doesn't matter how much money, but if you're withdrawing a lot more money than you're earning trying to sustain a lifestyle, you run into spending risk. And we'll get into withdrawal rates here and the risk that you run if they're too high. Longevity risk. If you know, I have, Chris, we have clients in our 90s, one that's 98, whose family, whose parents have lived into their hundreds. So people are living longer, meaning that if you're spending down your assets, better be careful, because depending on your health, which is one reason we give our clients a health questionnaire, because we're trying to determine the longevity risk that you run into. Health risk. What are the chances you get something like dementia or Alzheimer's? I know in my own family case, we had to deal with my mother's Alzheimer's and dementia, which created additional medical expenses that she wasn't planned for. And what I call shock risk. These are something that happens, an unforeseen illness. I had a client in their 60s whose daughter passed away, and they ended up raising children. I mean, the last thing you think about when you're 65 or 67 is becoming a parent again, or you're ending up having to help other family members. I can't tell you the number of times we are dealing with issues now with elderly clients who are running out of money, and the kids are having to step in and support mom or dad because now they're ending up in an assisted care living, and that isn't covered by most insurance. It's not covered by Medicare, and it's not covered by Medigap. What do you do when all of a sudden now, and here's where the greatest risk, Chris, is when a married couple, when let's say one spouse, and I'll pick on the husband, he gets Alzheimer's or dementia, he needs to go into assisted care. The well spouse, in 85% of the cases, it's the wife, all of a sudden she is maintaining her own household expenses while, let's say, the husband needs assisted care. These are things that aren't planned for, and these are the unsystemic risks that you have to think about.
And you know, Jim, these risks that you mention, which we're going to get into talking a little bit more about, I would imagine that they become even more important as someone gets older.
Absolutely. And here's a concept I want you to think about. If you're listening to this program, you're thinking about retirement. Your retirement, based on your age, is going to go through 3 phases. And in the industry, we call them the go-go years. And that's usually ages 65, 75. You just retired. Now you have no deadlines to meet. You have more time to travel. And this is the time you're really active. If you're taking trips and traveling, you're probably going to do a lot of that between the ages of 65 and 75. The second phase of your retirement, we call the go slow years, from 75 to 85. I have a client that's been with me since 1985, and he finally fully retired at age 70. But, you know, recently we were going through a review, and he admitted, because, you know, Jim, he goes, you know, I'm 76 now. And he said, it took us several weeks to recuperate. They took a 3-week trip. They went to China. And he goes, I just, even though he works out, he tries to stay fit, and he's in fairly good health, he just says, your body starts to slow down. I can't go and travel and keep the same kind of pace and schedule at 65 that I was able to do now at 75. And then we get to the third phase of your retirement, and that's called the no-go years, and that's from ages 85 to 100. Expenses will usually be higher at stage one. That's when you're spending a lot of money traveling, you're doing a lot of active things. And stage three, when you're more likely to be less active and run into medical expenses, taking care of assisted living, in-home care, etc. So that is one concept I want you to think of. Think of your retirement going through 3 phases, because the expenses will be different in each one of those 3 phases. The next concept I want you to think of is where you fall in the income asset class spectrum. Average, middle class, mass affluent, which is basically upper middle class, high net worth, think of Larry and Lola, lots of bucks. In ultra high net worth, think of Mickey and Megan, megabucks. And according to Barron's, megabucks, and according to JP Morgan Private Wealth, is people that have liquid net worths, that's talking about liquid assets, not real estate, of $30 million or more. If you're talking about high net worth individuals, you're really talking about people that have net worths over $10 million. What I call upper mass affluent, upper middle class, are net worths, basically you're a millionaire. And then below that is what we call the mass market. And the strategies that you use are going to depend and be vastly different in terms of what your balance sheet looks like.
Well, and you'd mentioned Larry Lots of Bucks or Mickey Megabucks. It sounds like you'd really have to be them in order to have a successful retirement based on what you're mentioning, Jim. So the only thing I want to ask you, though, because doesn't that sort of get back to the number of assets you'd need, the actual amount, in order to retire with no worries?
You know, Chris, on the surface, you would think so, and that's basically the way the financial industry and most individuals think about retirement. But it really has to do, and here's the key, it has to do more with what I call safe withdrawal rates. You could be Larry or Mickey and still have problems if your lifestyle and spending rates are so high in relation to what returns they can earn safely on your assets. The metrics that we use, and we use Monte Carlo simulations based on withdrawal rates, and we use more realistic returns than the 100-year returns that are still programmed in most software, which is a 10% return for the stock market and a 6-7% return on fixed income. So generally, you look at withdrawal rates between 3.5% and 7%. So if you take a look at the failure rates of withdrawal rates increase exponentially, the higher your withdrawal rate. So you got to think about if you're withdrawing 5 or 6%, and as you go above 4%, the failure rates increase dramatically. And that's something that has more to do with what is going on and the money that you're taking out more so than the returns of the stock market or your lifestyle. Because usually it's your lifestyle. A lot of individuals will have a high lifestyle of spending. And so they'll go to the advisor and they go, you know, based on my assets, I need to be taking out 5, 6, 7, 8% in order to maintain this lifestyle. In today's environment, that just doesn't work. It really gets down to withdrawal rate, Chris. And I want to bring a case study, and we'll just call this the case of Catherine and Mr. Market. When she came to us, she had a retirement plan. She had, and we're just going to make this simple, she had roughly about $500,000 of assets. She had Social Security, a small pension. And she needed to get $30,000 a year to make up the difference between her living expenses and what I call additional expenses, variable. In other words, the traveling, the trips, and things like that above, let's say, food, cost of shelter. Now, unfortunately, she retired just at the time a bear market was beginning. Now, nobody knew it was a bear market at the time, but her $500,000 at the end of the first year lost $125,000 due to market returns. In addition to the $125,000 in losses, she withdrew $30,000 to live on. So at the end of the year, that $500,000 account dropped to $345,000. Year two of the bear market, we start with $345,000. The assets lost another $69,000 in market value. She needed to take out more income because of inflation. So basically, she took out $31,000. So at the end of year two of a bear market, that $500,000 asset that she started with in retirement was now down to $245,000. Year three, we are now in a recovery. Think 2009. The market goes up. Her assets increased by about $74,000. But her withdrawal rate increased to $32,000. So at the end of year three, her assets are now worth roughly about $290,000. Year four, her assets are up about $57,000. However, she's taking out $33,000 in withdrawal to keep even. Her asset base goes up to $300,000, a little over $300,000. and $10,000. Year five, assets go up by $31,000, withdrawal rates $34,000. At the end of year five, even in a bear market, her assets, Chris, are about a little less than $310,000, which is when she came in to see us, because basically her withdrawal rates, if you're listening to this program and your money's in ETFs, your money's in mutual funds. And so you and your advisor, or maybe your plan, you set a withdrawal rate. In this case, Catherine's withdrawal rate was 6% a year. Well, if you're taking out 6% a year, interest rates are almost down to zero. The stock market is losing over 20% a year. You can see what happened to her assets. There was a huge drawdown of those assets, which was a combination of the assets themselves losing value due to the stock market and also the withdrawal rate. So think of anyone, for example, who retired in the year 2000 or 2007, what happened to all those hypothetical returns programmed into most retirement plans. They were assuming a 10% return for stocks and 5 to 6% returns for bonds. Interest rates fell during each decade. So if you were in a bond fund, you were experiencing dividend reductions almost the entire decade. In many cases, you were forced into higher risk funds to get a higher income return. And this is one of the worries I have about people in bond funds today. They have no idea that about 2/3 of the portfolio is in low quality bonds or triple B rated bonds. And so that's where people put their money after the Great Recession and bear market between 2007 and 2009. I mean, if you were an individual, that was the second time in less than 10 years you were hit with the bear market where stocks lost more than 50% of their value. So if you're basing a retirement portfolio on a simple withdrawal rate, it needs to be risk test to make sure the success rate is high and the failure rate is low. The industry typically focuses on reaching your number and risk, but you shouldn't even be talking about risk or asset allocation until you address what we call flooring. Flooring is simply a level of income that supports your lifestyle.
Well, explain that one, though. What is flooring? I mean, are we talking about linoleum or tile?
Well, flooring is the amount of income that must come in from your financial assets with the rest of your individual spending. Let's say, in other words, what's not covered by human or social capital, which could be either part-time work, Social Security, or a pension. That is what you need to get from your assets. So flooring is basically saying, look, based on my Social Security, working part-time, I have a level of income that comes in. I don't need to care about what, you know, Chairman Powell, Greenspan, Bernanke, or Yellen was doing or what the market's doing. I know this income is coming in. It's rock solid. It's dependable. It's predictable. That's the first concept you need to think through when it comes to retirement, and you need to think through how that looks through all phases of retirement, from the go-go to the go-slow to the no-go years. When viewed in this way, it's a different way of looking at retirement and involves different planning strategies. It isn't about a number. It's about funding a retirement lifestyle or a choice that works through all phases of your retirement. So when you boil it down, it gets down to focusing on your lifestyle, your spending needs, making sure you can fund it. And I have a case right now the firm is working on that was brought to our attention where a daughter referred us her father, who's in a retirement home. He's age 88. His long-term care policy lapsed because he didn't keep up with the rising premiums. Simply, he couldn't afford it. He's down to his last $400,000 of assets. He has Social Security and a pension, but it's not enough to cover the cost of the retirement home. And this is really critical. We're seeing so many cases like this today during the no-go years, which is years 85 to 95. The returns on his portfolio over the last several decades were not the same as where they were when he retired 25 years ago. When he retired 25 years ago, he could have got 7 and 8% in safe assets. He certainly can't get that today.
Well, I would think, though, that that's probably a common situation for many folks. But what are the alternatives? What can someone do? I mean, when you get into that kind of situation, what can you do?
In this case, it may be up to the kids who are well off to step up and help their father weather this storm and take care of his, you know, he's in a retirement home. And if he spends down his assets, it may be Medicaid, but he may not be staying in the same facility. That's why when you're planning for retirement, it is all about income funding. Everyone listening to this program is in a different situation when it comes to time frames, when you're thinking about retirement or maybe fully retiring. In other words, not even doing part-time work. It also involves asset accumulation, savings, and risk levels. But the real focus that needs to be taken is the ability to fund a lifestyle. Focusing on accumulating a certain number is meaningless. Think of a person that had $1 million and was assuming they would earn 7 to 8% in the year 2000. Well, we know that changed with the 2001 recession when Greenspan brought the Fed funds rate down to 1%, and then the next recession when Bernanke brought the Fed funds rate down to zero. Focusing on accumulating a certain number, it just doesn't work. You need to think of what happened to interest rates in the stock market over the last couple of decades. We're in a completely different environment today as a result of the measures we discussed earlier, from switching from defined benefit pension plans to 401k plans, medical advances, longevity, bear markets, historically low interest rates, quantitative easing, and central bank intervention. This has changed the landscape. So the focus needs to shift from a single number to funding, which is what we're going to be focusing on in the weeks ahead. In the next couple of weeks, we're going to be discussing a different way of looking at your balance sheet, a different way of looking at cash flows, asset allocation, and more importantly, risk mitigation. As we talked about earlier, unsystematic risk were our big ones as we continue this series on getting you into retirement shape so you really truly understand the various risk mitigation strategies that can help make your own retirement much more successful.
And Jim, I'm really looking forward to exploring this fresh look about planning for retirement. I think sometimes, you know, a popular financial topic can sometimes get stale, but I think this approach is really going to help a lot of people, particularly if they've been fixated on a number. So boiling everything down to that simple number, I think we're really going to open some eyes. And for our listeners, be sure to tune in tomorrow for another edition of Lifetime Income. As a reminder, we have 7 shows per week. Mondays and Tuesdays are our Lifetime Income series. Wednesdays through Fridays are our FS Insider series. And finally, Saturday has our comprehensive guest expert and big picture programs. And we're really proud of the work we do on these programs with leading industry expert guests and relevant subject matter. So please do tune in to each of these shows to be in the know on financial matters. And it is our intention to make you aware of the latest thinking affecting your health on many of our Lifetime Income episodes so that you're better able to enjoy your carefully planned finances in your later years.
In the meantime, on behalf of Chris Prytower and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. We have some really exciting programs in the weeks and months ahead, so I hope you'll stay tuned. And don't forget, tell a friend, whether it's a health issue, whether it's Social Security, or even planning for their own retirement as we go through these steps and get them focused on the right things you want to be focusing on if you want to enjoy and plan for a successful retirement. In the meantime, until we talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.